Good morning, everybody. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's getting near the end of August. It's August 29th, to Tuesday, 2023. And we've got one guest. I'm going to bring everybody on in a few minutes. Elizabeth Brown is here from Ocala, Florida. It's an NASSP show, National Association of Secondary School Principals. We're going to talk about the Principals Recovery Network, which helps school leaders lead and recover from gun violence. We've got Michael Sedlak here. He's from Ohio, but the reason I'm bringing up Elizabeth is because we are waiting today for the arrival of Hurricane Idalia, and Elizabeth is down there in Ocala, Florida, and we're hoping everything's okay, and we'll talk to her in a few minutes, but it's going to be a bad day in northwestern Florida, okay, up through the panhandle, et cetera. So we'll get to Elizabeth in just a second. As I mentioned, this show is going to be about helping school leaders recover and lead after gun violence. It's very, very important. There is such a thing over at NASSP.org, and it's called the Principals Recovery Network. These two wonderful people were co-founders of the Recovery Network. It's a great honor to do that, but it's not a pleasant thing to have to do. All right, so we're going to talk about it in detail. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, and that's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and we're real concerned about that. Everything we do over there is free at ace-ed.org. Excuse me, please check it out, including our magazine, which is called Equity and Access. You'll see the cover. Just click through. Very enjoyable issue. We have all our podcasts over there. Again, you'll see the link, and also our Excellence in Equity Awards. We'd love you to be involved. Please nominate companies you work with, your friends, your colleagues, yourselves, your leaders, etc. Okay, anybody's doing great work in equity, you'll see all the categories. Just click through. Again, it's all free for educators at ace-ed.org, okay? We're very proud of the website and the work we do in equity, helping schools make sure that every kid gets the education they need. Without further ado, I'll talk to the hurricane lady, the one and only Elizabeth Brown of Ocala Charter High School. Elizabeth, welcome. How you doing? It's Larry here.
Good morning. We're doing well down here in Florida. We are prepared for whatever happens and just kind of staying up to date on the news and weathercast as it's in the Gulf now to make sure of what type of hit we're going to take. We know we're going to take a hit. It's just going to be what magnitude. So we're prepared. Right now, Ocala is in the middle of the cone, so we're preparing for the worst and hoping for the best.
Jeez. Well, it'll be a three by – it'll be a two by then, do you think, or it'll be a three category?
By the time it gets to us, it's predicted to hit the coast at about a low three. So by the time it gets to us, we're about an hour from there. It'll probably be a two.
Okay, I hope so. And they're no fun. As I wrote you yesterday, I sat through five of them when we lived in Florida, and they are not fun. Okay, they're especially not fun after the storm goes. So everybody be safe, et cetera, et cetera. Now we'll talk to Hurricane Michael Sedlak. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Mike, the principal of the unit principal, excuse me, we can tell you what that means in a second, of Hudson High School in a very, very beautiful part of Ohio, in northern Ohio, between Akron and Cleveland is pretty little Hudson, Ohio. And but what's a unit principal? What do you do, Mike?
It's the same as an assistant principal, just a fancier name.
No. Well, congratulations on the fancier name. That's great.
Yeah. We break the students up, so I have freshmen and a third of the seniors.
Oh, nice.
Then we have another unit principal with sophomores and a third, and then juniors and a third. And then we kind of have our own areas that we focus on. One of mine is safety and security for the district and building.
Fantastic. And by the way, I will say it again, Hudson is a very pretty town. Okay, it is.
Thanks.
For those of you who've never been there, you would agree, Michael, right?
Yes.
That's really nice. And also, I want to get back to Elizabeth before we get over to the topic at hand. Elizabeth, excuse me, you're the current principal of Ocala, that's O-C-A-L-I, Charter High School in Ocala, Florida. And if I read this correctly, did the school just open this year? Is it brand new?
We did. We just opened just a couple of weeks ago and brought 9th and 10th grade into the building. And over the next 2 years, we'll build out to the full 9th through 12th high school level.
And how does it fit in? How does this charter school fit in with the, I'll call it the county school district down there? What's going on?
So the way that we fit in our particular district, the smallest high school is right around 1,700 students, with the largest high school being around 3,000. And that's pretty large for our small county. So the way that we fit in is that we have a smaller atmosphere that's more focused on one-on-one instruction and one-on-one attention to detail. We have all levels of learners in our classrooms, everywhere from at-risk learners all the way up to your accelerated learners. But it's really kind of that niche for students that want a smaller school atmosphere, want to feel like that they are more involved on a personal level with high school, with student life, and have a chance to succeed with the same type of programs as the public school, just in a smaller school setting for their needs.
Great. And what county are we talking about, Ocala?
Marion County.
Marion, thank you.
That's Marion, yes.
Yep, thank you. And how many kids are going to the school this year?
We have close to 80 kids in the school with 9th and 10th grade. When we cap out with 9th through 12th, we'll have 220.
Great. I wish you the very best. You're the founding principal over there, so congratulations on that. That's a nice honor. I really mean it. It's very nice. And, Mike, before we go on, I want you to talk about Hudson High, if you want. It's where you are these days. Tell us what Hudson is like. Good. Brag a little.
Hudson's a great school district. We're very high achieving. We have about 1,500 kids, so a little bit bigger than Elizabeth's school. a lot of students involved in sports and AP classes and theater. I think we've won an award for just about everything. So it's a wonderfully involved community supported by the community, and just a great place to be.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. Okay, and Ocala ain't so bad either, except for the next 2 days. Okay, but normally, you've got a hurricane coming. Now I want to get serious about this. We're talking about the Principals Recovery Network, and this is from NASSP. And I'll link it here, but if you could just Google NASSP Principal Recovery Network, and you'll find out what we're talking about. But basically what we're talking about is, and again, this affects the kids, certainly. Nobody's denying that. But it also affects other people, including the school leadership, gun violence in schools. And as you all know, it scares everybody. Let me just put it that way. And unfortunately, it can happen anywhere, as we have unfortunately learned over the course of time. And if I may, Elizabeth, I'm going to start with you. This is for principals and school leaders who have experienced gun violence in their schools. Where did this happen to you? I'm going to, Mike, I'm going to ask you the same question. I don't want to bring up bad memories, but everybody would be curious to find that out. So, Elizabeth, with you, where were you?
So our group is comprised of both principals that were on campus the day of an active shooter incident, or those that took over immediately after. And so I took over immediately after an active shooter incident at Forest High School here in Ocala, Florida. I took over about 45 days after the incident with the mission and vision of going in and helping the school community heal and helping rebuild a school culture for students. So that was then April 20th of 2018.
Wow. Mike, your experience, please, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I was an assistant principal at Sheridan High School.
Mike, are you on a speakerphone? Are you on speakerphone, Mike? Can you go back to regular phone so we can hear you more clearly, please?
Is that better?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
All right. So in 2012, February 2012, I was assistant principal at Sheridan High School in Sheridan, Ohio, which is Northeast Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an active shooter on campus. Three students were murdered, and three others were shot, one who is paralyzed still to this day. So that's kind of, how I got involved in this. After our shooting, thank you. After our shooting, Frank DeAngelis, former principal at Columbine High School, had reached out to
He's been
great guy. He reached out to our school to see what we needed, what help we could use, what we needed, how, you know, he's been through it, so what he could do to help, which was very much appreciated. And, you know, I'd say for the next year after that, we would, you know, call Columbine and get help from them whenever we needed it. Then, you know, years later, as more of these were happening, you know, kind of in the pay it forward mentality, I started doing the same thing. And at 2018 in West Liberty Salem High School, which is in West Liberty, Ohio, they had a school shooting. So I had reached out to their principal, Greg Johnson, and Andy McGill, their assistant principal. Come to find out, other people were doing the same thing, and that's when NASSP got involved. They realized that, you know, we were all kind of reaching out, trying to help each other, and that's when Greg Waples from NASSP kind of brought our group together.
It's so darn important and so shocking. And again, condolences. I'm so sorry both of you and so many others have had to go through this. And as you were talking about, Mike, I was thinking, when the hell did the word school shooting ever enter our lexicon before Columbine? And who knew what that was going to foretell? I mean, it's just I was in Vegas the day of Columbine, and I still remember getting back to my hotel, and like everybody does, turn on the TV, and I sat there with my mouth agape. Okay, it was beyond, it's beyond belief, and I don't go into all the details of that, but and we know how much it affects the kids. Okay, it affects the community, et cetera, et cetera. But I have to ask Elizabeth, you were brought in after an incident. Was the principal just couldn't go on? He or she was so upset, or did they just feel like it would be better for everybody if we had new leadership? What was the rationale behind that? If I may ask.
Honestly, I believe that the principal, the previous principal that obviously, you know, led the school community through the days immediately thereafter, that was already a planned move before the shooting. So he was actually receiving a much deserved promotion. And so they wanted to go ahead and, they wanted to go ahead and move forward with that. And so whenever they began to look at who they wanted to come in and take over the school, you know, they approached me about it, and I worked closely with the previous principal just to kind of make that transition as easy as possible. But his move was already planned before the active shooter incident as a, like I said, a well-deserved promotion. So I was very happy for him that he was able to go ahead and go, and then, you know, work together with him to kind of step into that position.
Sure. I'm sure you did a wonderful job. It's so hard. And on that note, Elizabeth, stay with me here. Okay, you are both working in the Principal's Recovery Network, and I know from experience. Okay, but that's experiential. I'm thinking of when someone dies, other people in the family join a grief group to talk with others about how to deal with their grief. Neither of you are psychologists, obviously, or psychiatrists. Well, what information are you sharing with other people with other school leaders who are going through this? And I'll ask Elizabeth, and I'm going to ask Mike the same thing when she's done. Okay, Elizabeth, just please talk about that. What's a meeting like, or a thing like, or however you work this?
So I'll let Mike kind of speak to how we pan out whenever we hear this going in. But for my part in it, the biggest part that I play as one of the co-facilitators is the minute that we hear about a school shooting, K through 12, we begin to kind of gather the troops and figure out who's going to reach out to them. And I'll, in a moment, I'll let Mike speak more to that process. But the biggest piece that we use for support, besides building the relationship with them, is our publication, The Guide to Recovery. And that guide is a very quick read, very pragmatic, can be used reactively or proactively. And it is strictly a document that is written from the hearts of our members for what they went through, what they learned from what they went through. things that we might have done differently, things that we definitely would do the same when we reach out to them. And like I said, Mike can speak to that process. But when we reach out to them, the very first thing that we do along with talking to them and starting to build a relationship with them is we send them that guide and we explain to them that these are our words, these are our thoughts, these are the things that we found valuable in the days, months, and years in the aftermath of an active shooter incident on our campus. So that's our major piece of tangible support that we give, and then I'll let Mike kind of speak to those other areas in which we build relationships with principals.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Mike, you want to continue?
Yeah, so, you know, when we meet, it's definitely a different bond. It's a different... You know, we've been through something that, you know, you've read about or seen on TV.
Let me finish that sentence that nobody should go through, that you've been through something
and
that correct. Nobody should go through. Yeah.
You know, we kind of say we're in a club that no one wants to be in.
Yeah, damn right.
But, you know, these principals are like family. I mean, we could be sitting around, you know, having dinner on a Zoom meeting and laughing and crying and, you know, everything in between. But when we do reach out, you know, we call, we send emails, send certified letters, anything that we can do to get in touch with, you know, those school leaders immediately following a tragedy of gun violence. Phones are being screened, emails are being spammed. I mean, you'd be shocked at the number of people that are trying to, you know, spoof a school or try to, you know, get in for malicious reasons. So we do our best to get a hold of those principals and school leaders and just be a listening ear. You know, our guide to recovery is, like Elizabeth said, it's our words. It's what worked for us at the time. As time evolves and situations are different, things are going to be different. So it's just kind of like, here's what worked for us. Let's talk through what will work best for you and your school community. You know, again, it's keeping the kids at the forefront and making sure that they're safe and comfortable coming back to school and reentering a building, you know, that something terrible happened. And maybe that's not the case. But, you know, it's really just kind of finding what works best for those leaders and school students community.
Mike, what are the common denominators in recovering from this? Have you found that quote unquote, it works everywhere? Or is there such a thing that works everywhere? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a one size fits all. I think definitely, you know, listening to the students and getting their input, you know, students are going to want to do different things depending on what their school culture and community was like prior to the shooting or the tragedy. So they might want to keep some of their pre-shooting traditions. They may want to change some things. So really listening to the students and to the staff. You know, if your staff's not well, the kids aren't going to be well. So,
that's
you know,
right.
Making sure you're listening to the people. You know, we talk a lot about servant leadership in education and making sure that you're serving the students and serving the staff and serving the community as to what their needs are.
It's so important. Of course, the country's culturally different in different places. It's got to be difficult. And Elizabeth, what's the standard reaction, which is a hard thing to say in this case, but the standard reaction by a school leader to this, does it start with the kids? Does it start with themselves? Does it start with the school culture? Does it start with guilt? I mean, the school leaders must feel guilty that this kind of thing happened on their turfs. Okay. Well, what's the sense you get of that? Please. Thank you. Go ahead.
School leaders by just nature are nurturers and rescuers, and so a lot of times school leaders are going to start with their students. They're going to start with the heartbeat of their school. And for my situation, I met with our student leaders within 24 hours of walking on the campus and just talk through, not just about the active shooter incident, but just talk through where is the school from the student's point of view? What do you want that needs to be changed? And how can you continue to communicate these things with me? So immediately set up a communication plan with students. And then I reached out to the parents and said, you know, I'm going to be talking to your students. My door is always open. Please come in and talk to me. I had a lot of parents that summer in between me taking over in the first of the school year, had a lot of parents coming in, and they really just wanted to sit and talk. They didn't have any demands. They didn't have any issues. They just wanted me to understand what the school had been through on that day. And then, of course, reaching out to the staff. Within a week of getting there, I did a thing called Bagels with Brown, and we just had bagels in the main office area, and I had about 2 hours that I didn't schedule anything, and I just sat there, and, you know, they came in. For some of them, they talked about the shooting. For some of them, they didn't say a word about the shooting. But just that listening, if it's the one place to start with school leaders, if you've been in the building whenever it happens, Mike can probably speak better to that. But from what I'm understanding from my colleagues on the PRN, if you've been in the building, you gotta take care of yourself. You gotta make sure that you're taking care of yourself as you serve others. For those that have not been in the building, just walk in and listen. Just listen. Yeah. That to me is the main piece that begins the healing process, is the school leader just listening to what the school environment needs.
And, you know, you're right. Sometimes we forget you got to take, and this is, of course, any type of grief situation, you forget you got to take care of yourself. It's the old analogy of in an airplane, put your oxygen mask on first and then give it to your child, then put your child's on. Okay, and it's the same thing. Mike, talk about that. Okay, you know, do school principals who are leaders, do they understand how they got to take care of themselves? Do they get it? It's hard. I mean, sometimes you don't even realize what kind of state you're in. Just acting on the rope.
I think again, going back to the servant leadership, I think we look at our staff, we look at our students, we try to do, you know, whatever we can for them, and forget about ourselves, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, and you can't do that.
You know,
can't do that.
You can't, but, you know, by nature, it's,
yeah.
You know, I want to make sure everyone's, again, safe coming in the building, feel safe, you know, getting the needs, you know, their needs met. And it's, you know, long hours and long days and nights and sleepless days and nights. And then, depending on the situation, you know, then you have funerals and you have, you know, calling hours to go to and things like that. And, you know, at some point, you have to take a step back and say, okay, I need to do this. But I wouldn't say it's the first thing on our minds, unfortunately.
And I hope, by the way, I hope we're talking to a whole audience of educators, and I hope none of this ever had, like Mike and Elizabeth, with a little luck, none of this will ever happen to any of you. But, boy, it is horrifying when it does. And I know you guys all went to Washington, okay, to talk with, I think you went to Washington, but you certainly talked to members of Congress, okay, all about school shootings, all about how to, you know, lessen the challenge, the recommendations, et cetera. I'll go back to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, what was that like? Okay, were you there? What did Congress have to say about all this? Yeah. Go ahead.
What I can tell you is our lawmakers, no matter what side of the aisle they sit on, school safety is important to them.
Good.
School safety is a never-ending topic with them. They do keep it, you know, in their agenda. They do keep it in, you know, their minds. What we do is we make sure that it's a front burner conversation, because school shootings are still happening. School safety still needs to be a major, you know, focus of our lawmakers, whether it be at the municipal area or the national area, because students can't learn. We cannot prepare our next generation unless they feel safe. And so as we go to Washington, D.C., and we have been several times to the Hill, as well as meeting with other entities like Homeland Security and the Domestic Policy Council for the White House, we have met with quite a few entities in D.C., just to talk through, including the Department of Education, how can we collaborate to bring our message and bring our advocacy agenda to the forefront of our lawmakers' minds? And then as we sit with lawmakers, we just tell them our story. We share our personal, memories of what's happened.
Mm-hmm,
we share
sure.
what has gone on since. And we share what we need, and they are very receptive. And normally, immediately after our visits to Washington, D.C., we immediately go into action mode. Myself and the other co-facilitator, as well as NASSP, have been meeting on a regular basis with the Department of Education, following up with our lawmakers that we talked with. They always have an open door for us. They always make time for us. And we have some very productive conversations that I believe lead to several of the different bills that we have seen come to the floor lately about school safety and what is needed for students to be safe in their learning environment.
That well said. And thank you, Elizabeth. Mike, what is the agenda here? And talk about some of those bills Elizabeth was talking about. But what's the agenda? I mean, obviously, it's very easy to say, and that I'm against school violence, I'm against gun violence, and anything
sure.
we can do. But the question is, what do we want to do? What would, as you folks go in there, what are you asking members of Congress, both state and national, legislatures? What are you asking for? What are you asking them to do?
Sure. One of the things we really pushed this past June was trauma-informed schools. It's basically all the adults in the school community, so admin, teachers, parents, law enforcement staff, just being able to recognize and respond to those who've been impacted by traumatic stress. So whether it's, an adverse childhood experience or, just learning the behaviors and things that might be red flags for our students, and then providing them with support and implementing what's called trauma-informed practices in schools.
Yes.
So, whether that's training, referral mechanisms to, link students to treatment and intervention services in the school or outside of school, in the community, and just forming partnerships between the schools. But, we're really asking our leaders to fund those things, fund the training, fund
sure.
the pipeline so that there are clinical counselors out there to help our students when we need. I know we have students that are waiting, weeks or months just to meet with a counselor outside of school.
Oh, it's terrible these days. Terrible. There's not enough people. Yeah.
Right. And along those lines, the teacher pipeline is lessening, which means the admin pipeline is lessening. And working with us and working with outside communities to increase those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask, and this is, you said you guys went to Washington. Mike, stay with me here. But, you're in Ohio. Let's just use Ohio. Okay, and
sure.
you all know this. Everybody I'm talking to knows this. Education is a state function, though we do have certainly a federal Department of Education. Okay, so I'm also our national legislature. But my question is, okay, when you ask for funds, okay, are we also working with the state legislatures and the state departments of education to make this happen? Okay, and I recognize you need funds from the feds. Okay, it's always good to get money from the feds. All right, but what about state? Have you gone to Columbus and talked to everybody? Then in
absolutely.
Florida, Tallahassee.
Actually,
yeah,
we actually have.
Don't
not,
go today
you know,
to
I,
Tallahassee,
met,
by the way.
Yeah.
Don't go today. Yeah, says wait on Friday. Yeah,
yeah. We've actually met with our state elected officials in Washington and talked about it there. Kind of when we're all together, I've met with, I talked about West Liberty Salem principals earlier. We've gone into some meetings together and talked with our local legislators. It's just trying to find time to actually pin them down and meet with them face to face. That's the tricky part. they're busy too, but
they are. They
school
are.
Safety
to
should
be
still
fair.
Be at
yep.
the forefront.
Yeah. It, you know, you got to put a balance in there, and it's got to be worked on by the states. But the fact of the matter is we really have to continually do something about this and not drop the ball, because it's only gotten – actually, that's a good question. I was going to say it's only gotten worse, but as a matter of fact, has it? I'll ask Elizabeth. Elizabeth, when we look at school violence these days as opposed to, I'll say, 10 years ago or whatever, is it worse or is it better? Where are we? You know?
I think when you begin to gauge whether it's worse or better, I think what you have to look at more than anything is the frequency of active shooters on a school campus and how you're responding to it. So we are having more frequent acts of violence on school campuses, but the way in which administrators and districts and superintendents respond has evolved quite a bit. And so that's a very positive thing. I mean, obviously I'm in the state of Florida, very close to the former and current principal of Marjorie Stoneman. They're actually part
Absolutely.
Of our PRN as well as, you know, close friends. So in our state, our everything about school safety, excuse me, is driven by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act.
Of course.
And so when we began to talk about, is it worse or is it better? I mean, when someone wants to commit an act of violence, if they're truly committed to that, they're going to find a way to do that. I believe that our situations have improved because we are more proactive in that area. School leaders, students, districts, superintendents are more prepared. It is a front burner topic, especially here in the state of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And it is something that, you know, leads and guides and drives everything that we do, all the way from hardening schools to teaching, you know, students about
mm-hmm.
how to prevent school safety, see something, say something,
say
do
something.
Right. You know, to the mental health professionals that we have on campus serving our students. So when we look at 10 years ago, these things were not necessarily a focus and necessarily a front burner topic like they are now. So to me, even though our acts of violence may increase, I mean, they are throughout society, our reaction
yes,
to it is more solid than it was 10 years ago. And our proactive behaviors and our proactive, you know, steps that we take to prevent and prepare, I believe, have improved greatly over the past 10 years.
That was a great answer.
I also think,
thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
I also think it has to do with, you know, social media and how quickly information can get out now.
Good point.
You know, even 10, 15 years ago, it took some time. Schools had time to prepare statements on what happened and gather facts and get that information out versus the instant, you know, updates on pick your social media platform. Even yesterday with the UNC Chapel Hill shooting, you know, we had former students from my high school attending there, and we're getting live updates like, hey, I'm sitting on the floor in a classroom right now. And, you know, you have that instant updates on what's happening. Is it more or less? I don't know. You know, someone yesterday said, how is this stuff still happening to our children?
That's a good question, isn't it?
Biggest question. How is it still happening? Why is my 9-year-old, now 10, you know, at the end of last year, he's like, oh, was there another school shooting? How is a third grader asking me, oh, Dad, there was another school shooting? How is that even a phrase that comes out of a 9-year-old, you know, and going to school now in fourth grade? And
It's frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening. And by the way, I didn't even know about this thing at the University of North Carolina. I read the paper today. I didn't even see it in there. Okay. Left one faculty member dead and prompted an hours-long lockdown and search for the suspect at UNC Chapel Hill. Okay. This is yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay. I can say thank you, but thank you for letting me know, Mike. And I mean, I didn't even know that happened. All right. And of course, just to take it further, in Florida, we had the Jacksonville thing a few days ago, in my opinion, a racially motivated shooting and nothing to do with schools. But this is everywhere. We can't. It's so difficult. OK, it's so difficult. And, you know, you mentioned before about the teacher pipeline. And one of the things that's happening out there, I'm sure, and I'm only saying this from my own personal thoughts, you know, people are thinking twice, like a teacher who got shot in Virginia last year. Okay, people are thinking twice, is this a safe job? Who would have ever thought one of the more dangerous jobs in someone's mind would be teaching? Okay, who would ever in a million years when we were all younger think of that? Okay, it doesn't even make sense, and it's horrifying. And I am so glad you guys are doing this because this is so important. And Mike, I want to ask you one last question. Okay, you had a shooting at Chardon. Okay, and you were there. All right, the next day or the 2 days when you had to go back, what was it like? How were the kids? How was everybody? I mean, it's a hard question.
So that happened on a Monday. Kids didn't come back until Friday. We, you know, admin and stuff, we had to go back and do some things and have staff meetings, stuff like that. But, you know, having the kids come back in the building was probably one of the most empowering moments.
Nice word.
You know, just having they marched from, you know, there's a little gazebo in the center of town. They all met there and they walked from the center of town. The streets were lined with the elementary schools and supporters of them. And they all walked into the building, and our superintendent, who has passed since, he was standing outside and hugged every single student and staff member that came in the building. And it was, you know, I get chills just talking about it. But,
it's a tearjerker.
Just very empowering.
It's a tearjerker. What a good community.
To have them take back their school.
Yeah, and you got to tell you got to so. I hate to put it in this thing, but you got to get back on the horse. Okay, and make people feel safe again. And it's brutal times we live in, and I'll tell you, Mike Zemlak and Elizabeth Brown, what you guys are doing is absolutely, it's incredible, and I hope people take full advantage of it. I really admire your work here with all this. Thank you, Elizabeth, and good luck with that hurricane today. Stay dry.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were great. Mike Zemlak, thank you, my friend. Continue good fortune with everything, and have fun at Hudson. Okay, and good luck
thank
with
you.
Your school, Elizabeth. You got a brand new school there,
thank
so
you
have
so
fun
much.
With that. Yeah. Okay.
Going
let's look to the bright side. New school year. Let's get through and have a great year. Thank you both. You're both you're both doing great work. Thanks a million.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Bye bye.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You're
you.
Welcome.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Wow. Thank you. Wow. Two great people. Thank you, Elizabeth Brown and Mike Zemlak. Mike's at Hudson High School. He's our unit principal there. And Elizabeth's opening a new school, the Ocali, with an I at the end rather than A, Charter High School in Ocala, Florida. And they're having a hurricane today or tomorrow, whatever. So stay safe down there. All right. And stay safe in your school. And just remember, this is there, God forbid you ever need it. All right. And it's NASSP. And just Google NASSP Principals Recovery Network. And I'll try to link this here today. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and I do hope you share this one. A tough topic, but I hope you share it with everybody. It's over at ace-ed.org. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.